reconvene the meeting back in order, regular session at 7:22 p.m. We have a group of people who have been patiently waiting. And so I'd entertain a motion to amend the agenda so that they can we can.
Mr. Chair, given the hour and the people here, I move that we amend our agenda to move up the public hearing on the Port Campbell and deliberations of Port Campbell matter.
I'll second that.
Okay. And then what we're in effect doing is postponing, and we'll come back to the other items following at the conclusion of the public hearing, Port Campbell. Okay?
Favor.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion passes. Okay. Next item of business is a public hearing, Port Campbell legislative amendments. Could you grab me the sheet? Grab me the sign-in sheet, please. Before we open the public hearing, we invite Eric Baker and DCD staff to present the Port Campbell legislative amendments briefing to us.
Greetings. My name is Eric Baker. I'm with the Kitsap County Commissioner's Office. I promise my presentation will not be longer than the Irishman, so you'll be fine. Most of this presentation I gave back at the work study 2 weeks previous. Basically, what we have here are some proposed amendments to Title 17 associated with the Port Campbell Rural Historic Town and the surrounding residential area. The purpose of this code is to marry the historic preservation of this town site with 21st century environmental protection and open space preservation. This is a historic town, and we want to maintain its landmark status. That being said, there is a series of industrial uses that are historic to the area that are not necessarily akin to existing environmental desires for Port Campbell Bay. There's been a multi-million dollar cleanup of Port Campbell Bay to remediate those types of uses. So continuing those types in that area are not necessarily appropriate, and if we can maintain as much of that as open space, that is the goals of this code. Again, as we're going through this code, I want to make sure that we're reviewing this through the lens of this is code regardless of any future proposal. Currently, Pope Resources, or their soon-to-be new name, has a proposal for the area. This code is complementary to that proposal, but the proposal that I'm bringing before you really needs to be looked at on its own. That whether it's the Pope proposal or some future proposal, staff has prepared these code amendments in a manner that is intended to be good for the community regardless of any proposal, whether it be Pope's or someone in the future. So the overview of this does amend zoning code. It only applies to the Port Campbell and immediate rural area. There are a couple sections that do have broader countywide impact associated with where wildlife shelters are located and further definitions of equestrian uses in the rural areas. Other than that, everything we're going to talk about here today is only in the Port Campbell Rural Historic Town and the immediate rural area. There are no zoning changes proposed in this, no comp plan changes. So everything you just talked about before, not going to happen here. Revisions to development standards, allowed uses, and permit process. So pretty much that is what the bulk of this is. The packet is large, but the number of changes are actually relatively small. So just in context, Port Campbell is located up at the tip of Port Campbell Bay. It is located just to the north of the Port Campbell Forest Heritage Park, 3,500 acres that have been recently acquired by Kitsap County. See if I can make this thing work without. This whole area down here and keeps going is the park. The area that we're going to talk about is up here. So the rural historic town, the Pope and Talbot Mill, began in 1853. It was a previous Native American settlement prior to that. It was a robust mill town through the 80s until the mill shut down. When the mill shut down, there was a desire to maintain its historic status. There's a change to the Growth Management Act that actually created the concept of rural historic towns. There is only one of them that's been designated in the entire state of Washington. That's Port Campbell. That was done in 2000. That's when the original code was written. Again, we're talking about 20 years ago now. It is a limited area of more intensive rural development, but not like the others. It is allowed, development in that area is allowed to mimic any portion of its history. And again, this was a very robust town with a whole mix of uses. Actually, probably one of the original mixed-use communities where you had your employees your residential, and your services all located in the same area. But unlike the other limited areas of more intensive rural development, we're not looking at a snapshot of 1990, where whatever happened to be there in 1990, that's what can be allowed there in the future. There's a lot more flexibility associated with this, but the historic nature is paramount. So these are just some of the images of the mill site over time. You can see the one in the upper left-hand corner is the mill prior to its remediation, and then a series of other historic photos. The current issues is this is a 20-year-old code. It's had piecemeal revisions over time. We have amended the whole code not a number of times, but we have some use titles and definitions have changed. Things that need some level of update that this code is attempting to do. The town is capped at a total number of dwelling units. Again, we are not affecting the density or the total number of units, and those units are divided up amongst the three zones. That was probably done in a bulk regulation standard. Basically, we have X number of acres. How many units do we have? Let's divide it up, and that's the maximum number. The number ends up being 2.5. Obviously, the waterfront zone holds a huge chunk of that capacity, though in its current zoning configuration, really cannot use it. The idea is that for these units to be usable throughout the rest of the rural historic town. And then we also want to provide complementary rural and agricultural uses. Many of these would fall into the agritourism area. And these is only applied to the rural area that is wedged in between the town site and the Heritage Park itself. So again, you're talking about a small area. So I've gone through the amendments and we went through it page by page before. I'm not going to bore people here today, but largely what it's doing is for any kind of development in this area, a town master plan is required. And the benefits of a town master plan is you're getting to see what the future of an area looks like holistically. You don't see bits and pieces, and what one developer does 5 years ago may not mesh with the next guy, etc. Town master plan leads that. Those have to be have to meet what are called town development objectives. And again, this is where the historic character needs to be preserved. There are about 6 or 7 of these that basically indicate here's what future development needs to look like. There is a definition and the allowance of wildlife shelters versus veterinary clinics. That currently wasn't in the code. That has been proposed in these code amendments. Clarity on architectural and site design review. Again, with those town development objectives and the flexibility of the town master plan, there still is the need for somebody, whether it be a consultant or whether it be a architectural committee, to take a look and ensure that each individual proposal that comes in after development of the town master plan meets those town development objectives. And additionally, when we go back to flexibility, there is the desire for, as this is a historic town and the history of this was not vehicle-centric, to have some flexibility in parking standards, road standards, and signage, to ensure that you can maintain the historic character and you don't necessarily have to have garages right in the front of the buildings. You can have garages around back. And on-street parking is allowed to be considered and considered as parking for the uses on site. There is also noise limitation. There are noise allowances. This is the most complicated section of it. Basically, because this is a kind of a mixed community with the commercial in the middle, what they want to be able to do is they want to kind of have a robust 24/7 type community where people might have music, they might have festivals, they might have things like that in the commercial town site. They want to be able to provide to create a little additional noise past the 10 o'clock threshold, but that would only apply to the other areas within the rural historic town. So these ability to make more noise between 10 and midnight, between the commercial areas and the waterfront, or the commercial areas and the residential, would only apply to the town site and would be known up front, kind of like having a notice of title. It's like this is what the situation is. And again, we're not talking about a significant number of additional decibels, but we are giving them an additional 2 hours to make daytime type levels of noise. And then lastly, to avoid impacting cultural resources, obviously, they've done huge amounts of cultural resource assessments in this area. They know pretty much as you can know without digging up all the area. But as development comes, they're going to start digging up portions of the land. And that's where they could run into historic artifacts, either Native American or ones that are from the Caucasian days. Those all, if they are disturbed, need to be cataloged, etc. We would like the option in the town master plan for people not to disturb these areas. If they see something in there, they could leave them undisturbed. But they're not going to lose the lots that is in that area. They're able to move those lots to another area of the town site. They're not getting additional density for this. Density cap still remains. It just allows them to develop another area of the town if they find cultural resources anywhere throughout the town. If that reserve area is not used, they do have the ability to, after the entire town is built out, to be able to use that for rural residential uses. So, again, whatever's allowed in the rural residential zone, they'd be able to do on whatever remains of this reserve area. So, again, no additional density, no additional land use intensity, with an attempt to avoid disturbing cultural and historic resources. This is, for illustrative purposes only, this is the town site master plan as currently proposed by Pope Resources. I put this out here to kind of show kind of what we're talking about. What we're looking at here is the waterfront zone, which is when we showed that picture that was the whole mill. There was all these overwater structures. The commercial is located here in the center, and then there is the residential around the outside of it. When I talk about the limited amount of rural that we're talking about here, it is really just this area in green. And again, everything to the south is our park and will soon be a ride park, which anybody read the paper earlier today found that the Public Facilities District has provided us $1.7 million to build a ride park and other recreational amenities. So this area, this area in between the two is going to be a perfect place for potential agritourism. But because it is a rural area, we need to make sure that that agriculture is primary. Any kind of agritourism must be secondary, and there's a whole bunch of footnotes in the tables to restrict the size, scope, and intensity of any agritourism uses in these rural areas. Again, agricultural is preeminent in this area. Everything else is secondary. So the amendments went through, and they changed a series of allowed uses in the historic town. They made some things allowed, but what they predominantly did is they removed the industrial uses from the shoreline. Now, instead of having heavy industrial mills, heavy intensive, potentially environmentally detrimental uses on the shoreline, they're pulling all those back. And now you're seeing more residential and tourist uses, which then would allow for the use of some of that density that's held in that area. It also makes changes to rural uses and its limitations. The agritourism I discussed previously is that. It allows for some types of small-scale restaurants and cafes to be located on an agricultural property, again, with specific sizes, scopes, and intensities. The density flexibility. Instead of holding the density in each one of these zones at that 2.5 units per acre number, they're now allowed to be moved around the town site. There could be 5 in one area. There could be 7 in another. But the historic character of this area must be maintained. So you're not going to see an apartment complex in this area. This is really going to be just the ability to move the various dwelling units around. It provides additional clarity on what equestrian events are, where they're allowed, and what the limitations are, as well as what riding arenas are. That is one of the components that applies to all of Kitsap County, not just the area that I showed on the previous map. And then it alters agricultural setbacks for properties within the town master plan. So going back to this map, this area located in here, we have agricultural buffers between properties. The agricultural buffers would still apply to everything outside of the town site. But for the before the interior lot lines, like between this lot and maybe that lot, you would need to maintain the agricultural buffers. Again, it's much like the noise. This is something that's being developed as a master plan up front. It's something that is known. Likely there are going to be two agricultural uses that may want to be right next to one another. Do you want them to give up what is basically 100 feet, 50 feet on either side for setbacks when it's not necessary. But again, that only applies to this area here. Nowhere else in Kitsap County. So as I mentioned, there are concurrent processes. There is that master plan and public and performance-based development application. There's a draft environmental impact statement that has been done. That is going separately, as well as a development agreement, which largely is requesting extended vesting. I think they're asking up to 15 years to develop this versus the 7 to 10. This is a very large-scale project that needs to be done in a coordinated manner. Additional time is common for projects like Arborwood, for McCormick Woods, things like that. These two will not come before the Planning Commission. These will go to the hearing examiner and then be recommended for approval by the Board of County Commissioners. I just want you to know that these are ongoing. What happens with these? We have no idea. We don't know if they're going to come to fruition. We don't know if they're going to be completed. What I do know is I have a draft environmental impact statement that is included in our SEPA determination for these code amendments that provides more detail than you're ever going to find in any planning level environmental assessment. It was a nice plus to have so I could show the true impacts of all this. The SEPA determination is out. The appeal period, I believe, ends today. I have not received any as of yet, but when we come for deliberations, I'll make sure that I have the full any SEPA comments that have come forward. So with that, I'm done with the presentation. I was a little shorter than the Irishman, but not much.
Any questions of Eric? Okay, I have a couple I wanted to run by you.
Mm-hmm.
So at the previous meeting, I addressed the issue of noise abatement, and discussed it a little bit. But that was my concern, and where did Midnight come from? I understand generally what they're trying to accomplish, and I had asked what were the other jurisdictions, and I checked into it and found out that Paulsbo and Bainbridge and Bremerton have a 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Paulsbo and Bainbridge have a 7 p.m. cutoff for construction.
Yes.
But 10 p.m. is the limit. The only latest one, I checked other Tacoma, other jurisdictions, they're all 10 p.m.
Yes.
Port Orchard is 11.
Yes.
So if we were to approve Midnight, what's to prevent from the business owners in Silverdale, even though this is a town master plan specific to Port Gamble, and not that it's an established precedent, but they could make the argument, well, if you're going to allow sports bars and these kinds of things, and Port Gamble tell Midnight, why aren't we allowed to amend the county noise ordinance and go tell Midnight?
I think it is the town master plan and the town development objectives that make that area different, that this is a known quantity up front. Places like Silverdale or Kingston are all sold in individual little pieces of property where people have purchased, run businesses when the code was one way, and then to have it change could be a drastic impact on either their neighboring residents, their neighboring business. This is all known up front. Likely there would be a notice to title requirement that goes along with all this, so it's all known up front. I think that is a clear distinction between Port Gamble and its one-time approval versus the more piecemeal manner of Kingston, Central Kitsap, Silverdale, etc.
Okay, that makes sense to me. Good. And then speaking of drastic, maybe in their testimony, if any of the proponents could address, for example, if the commission were to recommend that it be adjusted till 11 p.m., if they could address what the impacts to them would be, and maybe they could convince me that 12 midnight would be okay. The other thing I wanted to find out, too, is because I compared, you guys did, and I've complimented the other staff as well in the other projects, all the different generated documents you put together. And I like the matrix where you have the different LAMRIDs. I understand they're different. This is definitely different. There's one in Washington State, very unique. It's a great town, great company, and I know they'll do a great job with it. But I wanted to find out the other LAMRIDs, of course, have their setbacks, and you addressed those particular areas. But I see the conceptual drawing, but I can't tell what you traditionally call the multifamily, the concentration, the cluster development. But with this proposal, we would be eliminating there'd be no interior line or parcel lines with the town master plan. You're in the other process through the hearing examiner and the commissioners, but I'm just curious, has the proponent addressed what the town's going to look like? I mean, you showed us pictures, what the history of it, and I lived out there, so I know all the buildings and trails and all that kind of stuff. But have they addressed, I guess my concern is, how much, what percentage of the residential occupancies would be potentially could be multifamily versus single family, and what percentage would be, if they were multifamily, would be connected? In other words, I'm looking at fire protection for defensible space. Again, and the difference between here and downtown Bremerton is the fire stations, the full-time stations are coming from Pioneer Hill and Kingston, and the fire doubles every minute. You know, obviously, I know they have to meet code, and you know, whether it's automatic sprinkler systems and that type of thing, but
The current code as it lays out right now allows single family attached, so we're looking at townhomes and things of that nature. You did hit on it that as you attach buildings, fire code changes, there would need to be sprinklers. There is a new public water system that is located in this area that has fire flow necessary to handle sprinklers. So the code on this would be different for those attached structures. The single family would still be allowed to be constructed just like a single family. When I was talking about the setback limitations, I was talking about agricultural setbacks.
Oh, that's right.
There still would need to be setbacks for single-family residences. I think largely it's 5 feet. But again, you can do attached. You can do cottage housing. You can do a whole number of housing uses. I bring up this picture because it kind of shows the areas up in here, some of their kind of the residential areas. You can see that the density back in, this is a 1940s photo, colorized Ted Turner style. That basically shows that this was a pretty densely populated area. A lot of the homes have actually gone away over time, but that there's a lot that has gone on in this area, that it was a very intense, and again, one of Kitsap County's true mixed-use communities starting back in the late 1800s to the 1900s. We're really looking to kind of create that while trying to push away the industrial uses that really are not really consistent with the current environmental status of Port Gamble Bay.
Okay, and then last issue was the recreational vehicle camping parks. The end note references the 5 acres and the number of RVs that could be there, and it also mentions a transient nature. But as the applicant indicated, or can you show us on the map exactly which areas we're looking at or how big that could be?
I think the applicant really hasn't laid out exactly where these would be, but when we're talking about that area, we'd be talking about largely the uses down in here.
I
apologize. Someone should have told me to turn around
and
show you guys. You guys matter, but still. We're largely talking about this area in here. While this is all rural, this is all wetland and high-category wetland, so there's not going to be a lot that's going to be done in that area. I would assume that if we're talking about that kind of use, it might be down in this area or potentially this lower area. This is where kind of the model airplane field is now. It's where a lot of parking happens, but probably here. And here is about the only areas that are again rural that allow for the type of use like the RV park.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, Commissioner Moss?
Is the intention that this ultimately be a place where people live year round, or is the intention that it be more of a vacation rental tourist community, or
at this point it is available for all of those. Obviously at this point we don't have a really fully fleshed out vacation rental code, though you will have the enjoyment of seeing me back before too long where we get to talk about that. At this point it really is intended to be kind of a year-round location. That this is one where people can come enjoy the outdoors. Again, you're going to have 60 miles of trails just to your south end. But I do see that this could also be a tourist draw, and short-term vacation rentals may be a possibility. There's nothing in the code here that limits whether it can be full-time or short-term. And anything that comes forward with a short-term vacation rental discussion would be a countywide discussion, not just on this. But I guess I would look at this through the lens of this is intended to be a permanent situation with folks who are living, recreating, and probably eating. Downtown.
Okay. I guess my thought process is kind of associated with the agritourism and the noise limits. Those to me would indicate a tourist attraction, and especially the noise limits in particular would make me think we want people to come and spend the night if they're going to be at drinking until midnight. Just assuming that such a small area wouldn't necessarily support enough population for everyone to walk to the bar and get soused and we'll walk home again. So in my mind, the noise limit aspect of it, and whether that's midnight or 11 or 10, kind of connects. If it's, you know, if it's a hotel next to the noisy bar, that's different from someone's home with their kids mm-hmm. going to school the next day, mm-hmm. or they're getting up early to, you know, go to their commute all the way into Seattle to work or whatever they're doing.
The noise limitations only applies, the noise changes only applies to the places within the town site. It doesn't apply to any of the areas located out in the rural areas.
Okay.
So the proximity is a little bit better. People are able to walk. It's intended to be entirely pedestrian friendly. But yeah, if people who come and are purchasing in this area, that's why it'll be important to be included in the town master plan and notice to title, so that the folks with newborn children aren't buying the lot right next to the brew pub or something of that nature. But you're right, that could be a compatibility issue, and we really want people to know that up front. And that's one of the benefits of a town master plan, is it allows everybody before building one is occupied, knows that up front.
And as I mentioned, the notice of title is a good thing, and hopefully you have brokers and et cetera that communicate that effectively to customers. But we know from Whidbey mm-hmm. Island, with the lawsuits up there, against the airport that's been there since World War II. I guess these people moved in and didn't realize they had an airport next door, although there was an additional flight. So,
yeah, we do draft code in a manner to try to minimize litigation, but code is usually written for lawyers, to be practiced by lawyers. People would like it to be at an eighth grade level, but the ambiguity comes with eighth grade vernacular. So we really are trying to craft it, but I will... Likely, that's unavoidable over time.
Okay. Any other questions?
No offense to the lawyers.
Oh, go ahead.
I guess this is pretty cool stuff. I'm pretty impressed with what they've come up with. And my only question, I guess, is the Highway 104. That's a major connection from Seattle, Edmonds, up out to the peninsula, Squim and Port Angeles and points out beyond the Olympic Mountains and so forth. What will be the mitigation measures running all of that traffic through that little town site around that little roundabout right there? What are we going to study that more, or what is the plan there?
Again, going back to the difference between programmatic and project level, basically this is a programmatic, that's the problem with showing this illustration. This is a project level illustration. You're not approving this. You're approving zones that can create a series of different realities. As the project moves forward, and then the current environmental impact statement that is for this illustration, basically shows a series of mitigations that are on this map. But any project that would come in at a project level would have to meet all of WSDOT's needs, as everybody has to meet all of WSDOT's needs when the projects come through. You would have crosswalks. You'd have all the necessary things at WSDOT standards. I'm sorry, Washington State Department of Transportation standards. So at this programmatic level, it is, again, not increasing density, not increasing land use intensity, so we're not real, don't have the particular concern. But when the project comes in and they start proposing where these road connections are going to be to the highway, they're going to have to be reviewed at that time as a quasi-judicial decision sometime into the future. But but exactly how that's going to work, key component for any future project moving forward.
Okay, any other questions? Great. Thank you, Mr. Baker.
You.
Appreciate it. Okay. This is a public hearing. We invite members of the public to participate. We're going to start first with the members who signed the list. And then after I get through that list, if any other members want to come forward and provide testimony, we would greatly appreciate it. As a matter of courtesy, I'd like to extend 6 minutes to the applicant, and Linda and John or whoever, if they need extra time, they can apportion it. But if the commission doesn't mind, we gave that extra time to the Dickey Pitt applicant. I'd like to extend that to the applicant in this case as well, if that meets your approval. Okay, sounds good. So I'll open the public hearing at 7:52 p.m. Our first speaker, Mark Shorn. And when you, again, if you could please state your name, your general area of residence.
Sure.
We have a spelling here.
My name is Mark Shorn, and I live about 2 miles away from Port Gamble on Highway 104. So I'm here actually wearing two hats today, one as a neighbor and secondly as a stakeholder in the Port Gamble Forest Park. First of all, as a neighbor, so I do appreciate that there will be an increased traffic on Highway 104 going in front of my house, which is a concern. But that concern is far outweighed by the potential benefits of what I see as a vibrant town, where we'll have a place to go for dinner, and you know, we have a place to go and maybe have a small farm up in the hills and enjoy all that agritourism can give us. Secondly, my second hat is as a stakeholder for the Port Gamble Forest. I helped raise money to purchase the land so that we could save it as a park. And I gave that spiel to many community groups about what an economic benefit this park will be. And part of that was the idea of a ride park, which will be in the upper corner. So where the agricultural lots are, the ride park will be, as that road continues to the bottom of the page, that will be the location of the mountain bike ride park. And a mountain bike ride park is kind of like a ski slope for mountain bikes. It'll have all sorts of features, jumps, and et cetera. So that will be a large tourist attraction. And this development will help build a road to get to that ride park. So the development plan is fairly crucial for that ride park. And also, we received $1.7 million from the Kitsap Public Facilities District on the basis that this park will be an economic benefit to the county. So that economic benefit is integral to this plan being developed. The if I could just give you my dream, so you'll see there'll be a Sound Olympics bike trail that will link up to the Olympic Discovery Trail and via ferry to Seattle, which will then continue on as a cross-state trail. That trail will go right through this park and through the town. Secondly, you'll be riding your bike past this agritourism up on the hillside that right now there's this beautiful old Babcock farm that has this view of looking down over the town. You can see Mount Baker and the Gamble Bay and the Hood Canal. So you can imagine riding your bike past that and stopping for a local brew that might be there, or some farm to table kind of meals, similar to what you have up in Chimicum at Finn River. And then you can continue on as going up through the Olympic Discovery, or the Sound Olympics Trail via bicycle, or families could come up there with their kids and enjoy the ride park with their bikes, or hike 60 miles of trail. So it truly should be a recreation destination if done right. So that's my pitch.
Great, thank you.
Thanks.
Pete?
Thank you very much. I made some notes so I can be brief here. My name is Peter Orbe, and I work for Olympic Property Group. I am the weddings and events manager out there. My hairline might prove that, dealing with all those weddings. But I also been a part of the North Kitsap Tourism Coalition. I was the founding president up until 2019, and I work closely with the businesses there. I help put on the Country Christmas Festival Summer Fair, which we partner with the West Sound Wildlife Shelter. I manage the social media pages, and I am really into the marketing of the town. That's kind of been my directive is to get people to come to the town and tourism. So tourism is very important to me, whether it's agritourism, retail, recreational. We all live and die by it out there, especially the small businesses. And it's been great over the past, you know, decade or so. We've really seen a lot of growth in tourism because we put a focus on that. The businesses are enjoying the successes of that. And, you know, when I first started working there about 10 years ago, there was like 3 slow days every week for the businesses. Now there's maybe 1. So we got people coming to town pretty much every day of the week. So we've really put a lot of work into just tourism in general because it's bringing more people into the shops, helping the shops survive. They're paying their taxes. Everybody benefits. So we worked really hard on that. Just in the wedding business alone, we figure about 10,000 visitors come through Port Gamble every year because we do about 85 weddings a year, plus about another 60 non-weddings events. And so that alone is a lot of tourism right there. I think we can build on that even more. You know, just to be brief, if you've ever been to Port Gamble to eat, like a Butcher and Baker Provisions, or to shop or take a ghost walk, tour up there, you know how cool it is up there. Imagine what we can do by making these changes and improve the entire area. I think it's going to be the potential is immense. With that, thank you.
Thank you. Lisa Horn?
Thank you so much, Commissioners, and also Eric Baker for all of your time that you've taken tonight and with our previous meeting with you. My name is Lisa Horn, and I am the Executive Director of West Sound Wildlife Shelter. And I'm here tonight to support the Port Gamble legislative amendments that will make the wildlife shelter an allowed use in the 3 zones that we hope to occupy in Port Gamble. The West Sound Wildlife Shelter is currently housed on a site that's a bit over 4 acres, located next to the Bloedel Reserve on Bainbridge Island. The site in Port Gamble is nearly 3 times as large, and even more remarkably, the remote wildlife recovery cages will be nestled next to the 3,500 acres of open space rather than adjacent to buildings and roads. Excuse me. This will offer our recovering wildlife many things like space and quiet that we simply don't have on our current site. We will work incredibly hard to keep our patients wild. This ensures their success when we return them back to the wild. In our business, stress kills wildlife. We must always ensure that our care facility and property are as quiet and stress-free as possible in order to minimize the stress on the patients, keeping it as close to nature as possible. This is the least stressful environment for a wild animal to heal. A good example of this is our flight cage, which is an open-air enclosure that is essentially a physical therapy unit for flighted birds and raptors. In its current location, it is set back from a parking lot that is adjacent to our property, which is buffered by large trees, and a locked gate and a large no trespassing sign, but it is still visible from the parking lot. This flight cage will rehabilitate 25 to 35 bald eagles alone this year, as well as countless other species. It is the only one of its kind on the peninsula, and many other small rehabilitation organizations from throughout our region and state will transfer patients to the wildlife shelter for flight conditioning in this flight cage. So it's very valuable, not only to us, but to the region. On one occasion, an uninvited guest caused such a commotion by climbing over the fence and through our brush that a healing bald eagle was startled in the cage, causing him to try and escape the chaos. He collided with the wall and subsequently passed away from his injuries. In Port Gamble, this will not happen. The flight cage will be set back in a dense forest, completely hidden from the view of the public, which will create a safe and happy and healthy environment for the patients. Every one of our patients will benefit from the peaceful and natural environment this property provides us. The Port Gamble space will provide us with a safe, spacious, and perfect home to meet not only our future needs, but also better serve the region's growth as the only wildlife care facility of its kind on the Kitsap Peninsula. We are a tiny but incredibly powerful organization with a small staff of 5 and a mighty team of 75 incredible volunteers who give over 10,000 hours a year of their time. Our organization has treated over 10,000 injured, sick, and orphaned wild animals in the last 5 years alone. This year, we celebrate 28 years as the West Sound Wildlife Shelter, and we're very proud of it. In 2019, we treated almost 1,600 wild patients, representing over 100 species from 14 counties, 33 cities and towns throughout our region. We reported our highest release rate ever, which was 80%. This is unheard of nationally. We also assisted over 6,000 community members throughout our region and state with wildlife-related questions and concerns. We work very closely in partnership with U.S. Fish and Wildlife and our state Fish and Wildlife officers, as well as with local law enforcement agencies, including State Patrol, community police departments, and tribal police. The Port Gamble property is the perfect forever home for West Sound Wildlife Shelter, our county's only wildlife care facility. Please recommend approval of these legislative amendments and make a wildlife shelter an allowed use in Port Gamble. We would also like to request, and this is noted on your document, one small correction to line 298 of page 17 of the allowed use tables, to add footnotes 8, which clarify setbacks of the wildlife shelter, to the PPD process for the rural residential zones. Thank you so much.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for the great work you guys do.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Okay. Linda? Barry?
Linda Berry Mare. I'm the project manager for Port Gamble. I first got involved in Port Gamble actually as one of the volunteers working with Mark Shorn on the conservation project. When I was hired by the company, I ended up managing the environmental cleanup of Port Gamble Bay, and now it's frankly my privilege to work on the master plan of Port Gamble. I'm an architect with a background in historic buildings, so it's really pretty much a dream job. And these legislative amendments fit perfectly with all three of those interests. Port Gamble is a really unique historic town, but it has been a pretty quiet place. The county has worked for 10 years on the land conservation, and now we have this remarkable park that abuts the town. And so this transition to supporting outdoor tourism and the connection between the town and the park is a win-win for the town and for the county. And then on top of it, agriculture, if you look at that, there was a historic photo from the 1940s that showed the historic Babcock Farm. Babcock Farm used to grow all the food, the fresh produce for Port Gamble. So our new agricultural district will fit with the historic use there, bring back agriculture to a historic town, and to me that just makes Port Gamble and this whole region a real unique destination with the outdoor tourism, a green sustainable future, the history, and the agritourism all there in one place. I handed out a short letter there. The only key is that there is, we're asking for one minor correction that Lisa referenced, which again is the, sorry, it is the, probably is just a typo, but it was on page 17 of the legislative amendments, line 298. We want to make sure that we add footnote 8 to that PBD path so that we have the correct setbacks for West Sound Wildlife Shelter in that zone. In addition, I have a letter here from Visit Kitsap, our local tourism organization who has worked for years, in fact, has branded Kitsap as the, It's the natural side of Puget Sound. And that really is, Port Gamble should be able to be the epitome of that. And if as we have tourists come from the other side of the water, and heading up to the Olympic Peninsula and other places, it would be wonderful for, as they're driving through State Route 104, they stop and stay a while. They spend their money in all of Kitsap County, and this combination of multiple things to do in our area, I think, can really build tourism for everywhere. I do have a letter here from Visit Kitsap. I think my 3 minutes are done and beeping, so I only have one copy. But Visit Kitsap has also weighed in that they support the legislative amendments and the vision for increasing tourism here in North Kitsap and Port Gamble. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Mr. John Rose.
Eric, am I back? John Rose, Olympic Property Group, part of the still relevant Pope Resources for a little while. The picture would be great. Okay, thanks so much. I'll just take on a couple subjects. It was ironic to sit through the last thing where we were wrestling with industrial noise versus residential. And knowing that we were going to be before you trying to get rid of industrial noise. And what's important about it, I mean, to be historically correct, people did not have cars back in the day. And that's why towns were walkable. And back in England in the 1800s, people couldn't walk too far from the factories either. It wasn't a great living condition then with the smokestacks and the like. The zoning we're giving up, and I know I'm going to do something wrong here. So
yes, thank you.
This whole mill site has this mixed use which allows us to rebuild a sawmill. If you pulled back, you'd see that 500 feet away is Point Julia of the Port Gamble Sklallam tribe. And I think they would probably tell you they had enough of the mill site for 150 years and are not anxious to bring it back. Historic groups like the National Park Service, they really want to see things the way they were. But they aren't living here. They're in Washington, D.C., and they're not going to answer your phone call when that smokestack starts. Regarding noise, this mill site was noisy all night long. There was a steam plant, and it opened up with a whistle you could hear forever. And that's a little piece of the historic noise I want to keep, but I don't want to do a whistle. But what I don't want to do is have Port Gamble become what our other project, Port Ludlow, was. And I worked there for 5 years before I came and took this on. And what Port Ludlow was a place with so many rules, did not welcome families, they didn't want kids at the pool, and I like to say Port Ludlow is where you can go to die. Yeah. But if you want to live, and you've got a little gray hair, but you can still rock and roll, come to live in Port Gamble, because we're going to be hopping, because the place was always a center of activity. And regarding tourists versus full-time, the answer is yes, absolutely, for sure, tourists and full-time. That's what it always was. There was always visitors. There were two hotels. There was permanent housing for mill workers. And there was visitor accommodations. It was always that way. It was a bustling hub. None of us can remember how important and what an action center that really was for us. So, and the other point is Eagles, noise and rock and roll, how does that all come together? The reality is it's going to, you know, we're talking about the downtown area. And one of my greatest pet peeves, and partly because I'm a musician, is where you go to small towns, there's no place for live music. I can't stand it because there's going to be somebody who complains. So the town, literally towns, great small towns, cannot have live music. They can't do it because there's somebody in an upstairs apartment. And it is true when you plan this all out, and you tell people there's going to be noise there, with a big master plan, there is something more than a notice to title. With a big project, you have to produce something that's called a public offering statement. It's a brutal, gory document. And after your homeowner reads it, if they aren't in therapy or running down the road, you may have a sale. But it is a consumer protection driven document that says, hey, for big projects, CC&Rs, all this stuff is super, super complicated, and we're going to pull it out of the title report that nobody reads, and we're going to make you sit through and go through this, and that's why you also need real estate agents that are trained on how to present the public offering statement. Is it perfect? No. Will there be complainers? Yes. Will somebody go, well, this is what we were trying to be, and this is what you bought into. I don't know what the story is on Vashon or Whidbey or wherever it was, but chances are people came into the area after the noise was there, and they assumed they wouldn't be bothered, And they were, but there was no notice, there was no plan to introduce and educate them. So I hope that's a little different. Traffic in the roundabout, to be honest with you, dropping a sawmill that has 100 or 200 workers is going to take our traffic count way down. That's going to take our traffic count way down to compare to what it could be under the current zoning, because there will not be all those employees. Also, you're not voting on this, but it's cool. If you look at the mill site and you see that's the most valuable piece of real estate we have, in this version, there's two versions of the master plan. One has this area in green covered with tons of residential because it's mixed use. The Sklallam tribe and our company have been working together for several years now, and the tribe actually got a grant from the state RCO office to buy a conservation easement there. So now two-thirds of this mill site, we have to get it approved as a full master plan. The alternative with the full build-out has to get approved because we have to go through that SEPA process. But once it's approved, the funding already exists for this now to be 16 acres of open space on the water. And given the attractiveness of the town, that there's restaurants right there, I would say that this is probably going to be about the most popular park in the park system, because the mixed use, the restaurants, the food and beverage absolutely activate the park, which absolutely activates the restaurants. And so it's going to be awesome. But the other thing we did when we sell those development rights to create an open space, we mark also as another thing where we're reducing traffic, because there's a whole lot, there's 45 fewer homes in this than there is in the main master plan. So both of those things, and all of that traffic is going to go through this little circle. We need that traffic to go through that circle. And the reason is, once or twice a year, somebody who has had a lot to drink comes across the Hood Canal Bridge, blows through town, keeps going right over the cliff. And it's at least once a year we have a flyer out there. And nobody's gotten killed, but there needs to be something that slows the traffic down to what it is. This was here before the highway was. That's what I tell them. Hey, and by the way, we own your easement, so be nice. That's it. But in terms of full-time and part-time, the chances are, and don't hold us to it, it's just an idea, the chances are there's going to be a lot of retirees that will buy permanent homes. We probably won't have Airbnb stuff all through the project, because I don't think there'll be enough. The lots are small. There won't be enough parking to have Airbnb all over. A current thought, and I can't, maybe it does and doesn't happen, is if we're going to do Airbnb, that we do it in town. Because people are going to, well, of course, with that noise ordinance, people will be expecting it to be a little more bustling in that location. And actually, if you want to sort of drive higher value neighborhoods, other than Seabrook, which is a vacation rental, it is less of a full-time, Airbnbs often clash with the customers that you want to get, but not in town. I think that would be a good fit for them there. In fact, there may be no need for the hotel, and it may just be all short-term stays. So that's the other thing. So that's it. It feels, we've tried to make this the kind of place we would want to come spend time at. The wildlife shelter, there is no zoning for them anywhere in Kitsap County, because there's only one. And while they're that special, nobody wrote a zoning code for them. And so we ran into that issue as we wanted to bring them up here. And what a great fit that fits with tourism. They're in a location that is surrounded by all these wetlands. So, and if you've been up there on those trails, there's trees like this still up in Port Campbell. Some logger forgot. I don't know how it happened. We're trying to get to the bottom of it. But and so that use next to greenhouses, next to a historic farm, it's going to be really fun if, after working on it for 20 years, something ever happens. But you're an important step for us to get through to try and realize something I hope will be the pride of everybody in the county. and I take any questions.
Any questions? Thank you.
Okay, appreciate thanks. It. Thank you.
Very informative. Thank you. Okay. Do any other members of the public wish to testify about this agenda item? Please come forward. Seeing none, before I close the public hearing, staff has recommended that we leave the record open until when?
Yes, just to ensure that people have the opportunity to testify, we'd recommend that you close the oral hearing,
right,
but you leave written testimony open until close of business next Monday at 4:30. That'll give people the opportunity who heard about this meeting and might have some additional comments, or if there's any questions that come up, I can respond to them, and then the public can respond to those responses. It creates a little additional time and still gives staff enough time to be prepared for your deliberations 2 weeks, or not 2 weeks, but next time we get together.
Okay. What's the specific date, Monday at 4:30?
Monday would be the 11th? No, 10th.
Okay.
At 4:30 p.m.
Does the commission concur?
Yeah.
Okay. So close the oral portion of this public hearing, and we'll extend and keep open the written until 4:30 p.m. Monday, February 10th.
And if there are any questions or any additional information that the Planning Commission would find helpful for deliberations, please let the clerk know. She'll let me know, and I'll be able to provide that hopefully in advance, if not on the evening of deliberations.
Oh, go ahead.
We did have some comments about a small typo.
Yes.
I assume when we get ready for deliberations, you have findings of facts that will include that.
Yeah, the testimony we received about the footnote, yes, we have had a lot of conversation about that. That is something that if the Planning Commission were to move forward with deliberations, we would be probably putting together some kind of a matrix that would potentially be one of the matrix items. The Planning Commission could either vote on each of the items separately, or they could vote on the whole matrix as a whole. It would be up to you at that time.
Great.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you. And thank you very much for squeezing me in.
No problem. Thank you for the patience of everybody who had to wait through our earlier agenda item. Appreciate you coming today. Now we can return to... Okay, returning to item E, deliberations and recommendations, 2019 comprehensive plan amendment update. Do you have any recommendations at this point? We finished the bottom one in the three separate. Do you want to jump ahead to the first group and adopt those? Okay, and then we'll come back to the other two. Okay, sounds good. So staff's recommending you consider the clarifying edits, centers, and Silverdale-Kingston UGA Association and Future Incorporation. Shattuck.
Mr. Chair, I recommend move the recommendation of the three amendments as proposed by staff.
Second.
Do we have a motion and second? Any discussion? Okay, I'll just note, similar to the other projects, I think staff did a really good job identifying the various issues and in each of those reports, as well as the rationale for approval. Okay. Any final comments? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion to approve the clarifying edit centers and Silverdale-Kingston UGA Association Future Corporation, please say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Do you have a preference, or should we do MRO first?
Please. Okay. So the mineral resource amendment, there is one change to consider on this that I'd like to introduce briefly, which is one parcel on the Willamette Meridian Road, which is highlighted on the map there. It came in as a public comment asking, you know, would we qualify as well? Staff did analyze that and identify it did meet the criteria due to the critical areas, and so that's one change to consider to amend what is currently included in the staff report.
Okay, Commissioner Shattuck.
Already get discussion started. I move to recommend the adoption of the amendment as proposed in the staff report.
Okay.
I'll second.
We have a motion and second to approve as recommended by staff.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to propose an amendment to the original amendment to remove the MRO overlay from parcel 192501-2-005-2006 due to critical areas as suggested by staff.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion second to amend the underlying motion to include the additional parcel 192501-2-005-2006 due to critical areas. Is there any discussion on the amendment to add the additional item?
I have a question of staff. At our last meeting, a gentleman testified about some kind of procedural glitch that was inhibiting his ability to do something with the property. Is this the parcel that
this is not the parcel. That gentleman's parcel is north of this on Willamette Meridian Road. His parcel is included in the original staff report for MRO removal. So his issue will be resolved with the amendment as it's proposed.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, all those in favor of the amendment to include the parcel, please say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. The amendment is approved. So now we have the underlying motion to approve as amended. Any discussion? Are we okay? Discussion. Okay, all those in favor of approving the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Sorry. Get tired. Those opposed?
Real original,
I dropped the right hand, left hand. Let's do that again. Okay, so all those in favor say aye and raise one of your
aye.
Hands.
Aye.
Two, Jim. All those opposed? Get motion passes. Thank you.
Okay,
now we're down to the Kingston. Phase two, and if you can help me too, because we have two different reports.
So for downtown Kingston, it is an extensive amount of edits to address the barriers and address consistency issues. We received only a few comments that were very thoughtful, several from the work group that helped develop this. And so there are four changes to consider that are outlined, mostly around mixed uses and continuing to refine around that issue in Kingston. And then one amendment or one change from the Port of Kingston regarding off-site parking distances for the ferry terminal. A very specific revision. In your packet and in your handout that you got tonight are the text changes associated with that on page 2 of 4. And I also have slides for those as well. And at your pleasure, Mr. Chair, I can introduce those, or we can approach this however you would like to approach it.
If we could, should we adopt the underlying motion to approve and then consider each amendment? Okay, so we'll entertain a motion to approve the, I got the two packets because I got downtown Kingston and the Kingston Urban Village Center. But we're just talking about phase two, right?
Phase two,
okay.
Yes.
So a motion to approve a comprehensive plan amendment process, downtown Kingston phase two.
I move to recommend the adoption of the amendment to Downtown Kingston Phase 2 as proposed in the staff report.
Okay.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve Downtown Kingston Phase 2. Okay, discussion and amendments. So do you want to go ahead and proceed with the first amendment?
Sure. So on this slide before you, the first change to consider is a map change, which is an exhibit to the design standards for the community of Kingston. And this is regarding the designation of pedestrian-oriented commercial frontages in downtown. The comments we got were that the mixed-use requirement was one of the original barriers we were trying to address, and some comments felt we shouldn't designate any streets for designated mixed use, and other comments were that we should designate less. And so the alternative, or the image on your left, is the original staff report recommendation. The image on your right is a reduced area of designation that staff felt reflected kind of a compromise around the comments. So that's the first change. The second that I'll introduce related to it is on the right in the strikeout language. I just want to be clear that entire section, that entire provision is a proposed addition to the design standards. The strikeout is just showing the changes, the additional changes to what was in the staff report. So the entire thing would be new, but revised by what's stricken here. The comments were asking about clarifying, would you have to build it to commercial standards up front, the first floor commercial space, or would that have to be converted later? Let's provide some additional clarity around that. We met with our fire marshal and building division folks, and from that conversation, staff came up with this proposed change where you just build it out to commercial standards. You can occupy it as a residential use. We strike the initial part of residential use, so you can use it for residential at any point in time. There's not a restriction there, but it seemed like an excessive burden to build it out to a residential standard first and then convert it to a commercial space later. So the reduction in amount of frontage designated and the initial construction of commercial seemed like a compromise from the staff's analysis. And also in your packets was a map showing kind of current uses where most of the parcels in this current frontage are already commercial. There's one single family residential lot and there are two parking lots that would have to develop to a mixed use standard.
Commissioners, what's your pleasure?
If you're comfortable, my thought was just do these one at a time, the four of them, introduce each one, if there's any discussion,
yep.
Then adopt it and do that, and
yeah,
adopt
I agree.
Each one as we go.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, I wish to propose an amendment to the original motion to provide that the attachment A, Exhibit 1, Appendix B within the staff report be replaced with the amended attachment A, Exhibit 1, Appendix B as presented by staff this evening.
Okay, we have a motion, and I don't dare repeat it because I'll probably foul it. But
One suggestion, okay. Commissioners. To simplify the motion, if you accept the changes as they're proposed here, mm-hmm. you might reference just to amend it as proposed as change number one.
Okay.
To simplify.
I strike the original amendment proposal, and instead I move that we amend the original motion to adopt the proposed change one as presented by staff this evening.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. We have a motion and second. Any discussion?
Just for the record, I would mention that it is the reduction of the Front Street area in downtown Kingston. Just so we're not, somebody goes, change one, what was that?
Yeah. I'll accept that as a friendly clarification to my proposed amendment.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor of approving the amendment, say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, motion carries. Next amendment.
I'd like to propose an amendment to the original motion to adopt change proposal two as presented by staff to revise the mixed-use provision for commercial frontages.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
A motion and second to adopt number two, revised mixed-use provision for commercial frontages. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed, motion carries.
Okay, so the third change to consider is regarding parking garage structures in downtown Kingston. So the provision on the left side of your screen here, labeled H, is an existing standard in the design standards, and one that kind of slipped by the review of the work group. So this came in as a comment to you, and staff concurs that removing this mixed use makes a parking garage probably more viable. So it removes a requirement to build tenant commercial spaces as part of a parking garage and clarifies what other parts of the design standards the garage would need to comply with.
Okay. Chair entertains a motion. Anybody else want to get
Chair, I move that we amend the original motion to adopt the proposed change three as presented by staff this evening to remove the mixed-use requirement for parking garages.
Okay, we have a motion as an amendment to remove mixed-use requirement for parking garages. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Any discussion of the amendment? Hearing, oh, go ahead. Commissioner
Actually,
Ball.
I'm kind of on the fence about this one. I'm not saying I'm against it, but can you convince me that we're not going to end up with, you know, you're walking down the street in an interesting neighborhood and you come to a parking garage and you're like, well, the neighborhood's done being interesting. I'm not going to go any further. I'm afraid that will happen if we have a big parking garage stretch right in the middle of an interesting area. So if you can reassure me, that's all I need.
So the standards in Chapter 4 address articulation, orientation to the street, the frontage improvements, openings, so windows or openings, and how those are patterned. So there's a lot of design standards there. Would it allow a structure to be made out of gray concrete without lots of other colors? I think yes. There's not a requirement for it to be like colored, or the standards require materials consistent with the Maritime Northwest. There might be a little bit more, you know, we could come back maybe with a little bit more of a specific response on some aspects of that, but I don't anticipate a giant concrete box without any articulation or character to it. The parking garage, actually, I don't know whether it's a conditional use. That would be another measure that would address design. Let me see if I can find that.
Yes, since we are wanting parking garages to be potentially a solution to the problem of having a lot of parking in the downtown core, we just want to make sure that the parking garages themselves don't break up the feel of the downtown core.
So an off-site parking facility, like a parking structure, would be an additional and administrative conditional use permit. So there'd be a higher level of review, public comment, and opportunity to place conditions on the project.
Okay. Then I'm okay with it.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay, hearing none. We have a motion second to remove mixed-use requirement for parking garages. An amendment. All those in favor say aye. Raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. The fourth and final change for the evening is regarding off-site parking and the distance for that off-site parking. So current code allows off-site parking countywide to be 300 feet. The existing recommendation is to expand that to 800 feet within this new high-capacity transit station area that we're designating in Kingston. And this proposed change would increase that to 1,000 feet for off-site parking only for public ferry terminals. 1,000 feet came from the existing distance of the port parking lot from the existing ferry terminal. So this is essentially to allow existing parking to meet these requirements. So you wouldn't see ferry parking further than what it currently exists in the community.
Mr. Chair, I'd move that we amend the original motion to adopt the proposal four by staff presented this evening to provide the allowed distance for off-site parking for ferry terminals.
Okay, we have a motion to amend. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and second to revise the allowed distance for off-site parking for ferry terminals. Any discussion?
A little confused. Can I just get some more clarity on what this is saying exactly? I mean, are we talking about parking structures specifically for the ferry?
So this relates to parking, whether it's surface parking or structured parking, but would allow ferry terminal parking to be located as far as 1,000 feet from the terminal building.
How do you determine whether somebody's parking for the ferry or just parking?
Yeah, so this would be come into play, like if there was a permit to renovate the ferry terminal and there was additional parking proposed as part of a larger project associated with the ferry terminal. And if they're going to build a parking structure, that's an administrative conditional use permit, and some of that parking is dedicated to ferry use, like monthly commuter parking, that would be allowed within 1,000 feet of the ferry terminal.
But right now, that is where the parking is 1,000 feet.
Yes. So, right. So it would make existing parking conforming rather than non-conforming, and future development within the port property conforming as well. I don't know what the regulations were in place at the time that those parking facilities were built. This measure is essentially to kind of cover the basis, is how I see it.
Now, I may be confusing, but wasn't the original proposal 800 and they wanted to increase it to 1,000?
So, yes, the original proposal for this amendment was 800 feet, and that's a general increase in distance within the transit station area. So, for any use, residential or commercial mixed use within that area, this increase to 1,000 feet is only for a ferry terminal.
Okay, so I've learned from Commissioner Phillips. How is that? I just want to make sure that's not arbitrary, too. Why the difference in the 200 feet?
So the 1,000 is what's existing.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that makes a difference.
Which the port measured their property and said, can we make this 1,000?
Any other comments or questions? Okay, we have a motion to approve an amendment to revise the allowed distance for off-site parking for ferry terminals. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion carries unanimous. And sorry, I should have been saying that earlier too. Most of these have been unanimous. Okay. Yeah. Past my bedtime. Is that it?
So that's it for the amendments. So the plan moving forward would be on the 18th. We'll bring a draft of your findings of fact and recommendations.
We have to do this full motion still.
Oh, sorry. Oh, yes. Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad. See, it is good to have a lawyer here. We had four, and now we're down to two, right? With Kim and yeah, we're down to two. Okay, so any other amendments? Hearing none, we'll now return to the main motion with all of the amendments. The batch, you okay with that? Okay. All those in favor of the original motion as amended, please say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, motion carries unanimous. Great.
Okay. Thank you. So,
thank you.
So findings of fact and recommendations, we'll draft those. They'll be in your packet for the 18th. All of these will be really straightforward. With the Dickey Pit and the change in the recommendation there, we'll do our best to draft how that meshes with the findings. And if there's any points of discussion, we'll try to highlight those and provide information and options or context for you. I can't predict now if there's going to be any issues or not, but we'll get into the technical parts of it and deal with those as we can.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
On behalf of the I almost said staff, but on behalf of the commission, thank you to the staff. You guys did a fabulous job.
Thank you.
And likewise, I'd like to thank the commission for the
thank you. Next item of business is good of the order, correct? Okay, do we have any staff reports? Angie?
No, sir.
Nothing? Great, I'll make mine real fast then. The status of the annual report, what's our time frame for that?
We usually try to get that done in the spring.
Okay. Got a ways to go.
After we get some of this stuff behind us, we can move forward with that. But that's usually March, April.
Okay, great. Next thing is, I know we got a bunch of things happening in Public Works as well. And some time ago, I mentioned an interest in things happening in Public Works. And I'm wondering, possibly, if we have time later this year, maybe in the next 6 to 12 months, we could get like a half-hour briefing from Public Works, maybe the director. And it's just a matter of timing when it would be good to fit in, talk about concurrency. You know, we interact with transportation needs and issues a lot, and there's a lot of concerns even from members of the public addressing us recently about traffic impact. So, and I know there commissioners, county commissioners received a briefing, I think that was yesterday, regarding their traffic impact fee study that they're engaging right now that's going to come later this year. And there were a whole host of other issues, too, so they're in a time of transition. But I know at the staff level, you guys interface with Public Works, but maybe at some point, if we could get some education and briefing from them, that'd be great.
We'd be happy to pass on that request.
Okay. And then last issue is, I probably stuck my nose where it doesn't belong, but we have a vacancy in the Central District, and one of the challenges I had with Dickey Pitt felt a little bit of weight to the world because I didn't have two fellow commissioners to help out. That's why I said I was very much interested in the testimony of the commissioners today. And anyway, because of the vacancy, and Commissioner Wolf had been advertising it, and I know there were applicants, and I did make some comments to Commissioner Wolf as an individual commissioner, but I wanted to let you know that. And it was basically to the extent of it's, I, recognize it's entirely his decision. He can pick whoever he wants. But like Dave Ward mentioned, the commission's in a real sweet spot. And in all the decades I've been involved in the county and the planning commission, this is the best I've seen it. And part of my job as chair is to try and maintain that. So I encourage Commissioner Wolf, as a criteria of deciding the appointment, that he looks at the personality of his appointment too. And good luck to him, right, and pick the right person. And I understand he's made his selection. That individual's in the office, although in the audience, but it won't become official until the commissioners' meeting, I think, next week. Correct? Yeah. You want to introduce yourself since you're here?
My name is Alan Dean. I'm a retired.
Oh, sorry, you have to come up to the podium.
My name is Alan Beam. I'm a retired submarine bubba. I've been following the commission's work here for about the last 20 years. It all started with the Shoreline Master Plan and went further. I have to say, this is one of the best meetings I've seen out of the Planning Commission. Everybody gets along. You have good questions, and there's none of the rancor that you used to be there. I want to commend you for doing that, and I'm looking forward to joining the group.
Great, welcome. Look forward to working with you. And actually, this is my first meeting as chairperson, trial by fire, but I just got to help keep it together because it was my predecessors, I think, that have done a fantastic job, and everybody here brings something to the table. I think it's fantastic.
Okay, feel free to do a mic drop when we're done.
What was that?
Feel free to do a mic drop when we're done. And
no, I'm right. As chairperson, I'm writing out my letter of resignation tonight. And by the way, I've become an expert at the rules of procedure, and I will note that if I were to give it up, the vice chair automatically becomes the chair. It's not a matter of choice. Although I will say I probably will be a lame duck. I'll serve as long as I can, but I think it's important, even the chairperson, and even looking at the history of the Planning Commission where you had a chairperson that lasted multiple years, I think it's good to have new people come in and take their turn. So I'll be looking forward to my successor, whenever that may be. Okay, any other items? Hearing none, meeting is adjourned at 8:49 p.m. Thank you.